We're having fun now. Yeehaw. I'm Laura Christine, and I'm just loving it. $64,675. It keeps rolling in, and I'm rolling in right now. It's the out-of-the-box that you've been waiting for, and I want to let you know that this out-of-the-box special is made possible by the good folks at... Oh, where did we go? Where did we go? Hold on. I'll do this first.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And then I should say this. You are listening to KKCR, Hunley, KAQA, Kilauea. Yep, at K224CQ in Anahola and K284AL in Haleiwa on the gathering place of Oahu. It is about 4 o'clock. We've got 2 hours of a community forum for you. Going to be covering a lot of ground. First hour looking at yesterday's action in Oahu on the District 9, I think. Federal Appeals Court, we'll get that straight for you, but it was the hearing that a lot of us have been waiting for, just to find out what are the final decisions. Is it legal? Is it not legal? I'm talking about Ordinance 960 and Bill 2491, as well as on the Big Island, the moratorium, and the there we have boom, Kanani in the house. We had Maui's moratorium on GMO as well was being heard. So the legal arguments were presented. The legal eagles were presenting their information and sharing the mana'o in front of the robed ones in the court of law. So that's what we'll be hopefully talking about in the first hour. The second hour, we're going to open it up for an upcoming event that's happening tomorrow, a vigil for the in remembrance of the 49 victims of violent assault against them that led to their premature departure from this planet. And a vigil that will happen in Wailua at the river on the bridge at 6:45 around sunset, and also a little pride weekend happening on Kauai. That story will involve a lot of emotions and some hardcore issues that we have to deal with as a community, as a society. How much violence do we want in our diet? Just like the GMO issue is asking us, how much pesticides do we want in our diet? How much genetically engineered stuff do we really need? Do we really want? So I will get on with the show. I will also play my underwriters so that you will know, just because if it wasn't for our underwriters, we really don't have a whole lot going on except for volunteers begging for more money. And we did that for a while, and we got $64,000 out of the gig. We appreciate your love and your support. So thanks for that. Here it is. This out-of-the-box show is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the good folks at Kalaheo Chiropractic and Ching Young. Check it.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Ching Young Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Ching Young, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, brother. Donovan stepping out. And Jonathan Jay, we're talking about you, so we'll hear you on the airways one of these days soon. Next week, Thursday, I think I will be at the helm here with Lisa Aaron. She is running for the county prosecutor's office. We will be moving into campaign season on the local end. Of course, all of you all you burners out there, I'm sure, still feeling it and wondering what the heck. So we'll talk some more about that, too, next week. This is... an out-of-the-box show that's going to start off with a little bit of music. Warren Zevon, that's right. This is the Lawyers, Guns, and Money show, and we'll get there and then go on and beyond. Looking for a phone call coming in soon. Our friend Fern Rosenseal was going to be calling us up, so we'll be expecting a phone call soon, but sit back, enjoy. We'll be here for you. There we go, a little Warren Zevon for you on this Thursday afternoon. I did get a phone call, the person that I was hoping. Fern Rosenseal, are you there? And can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Fern. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us. I know you're a busy woman these days. I wanted to just check in with you about your experience yesterday on Oahu at the federal court. And this was to hear the trifecta of Hawaii, Maui, and Kauai's case against pesticides, GMO regulation, and what else? What else was on the docket yesterday?
There was a couple of other things in relation to questioning who had the right to intervene and some other stuff as well. But the main thing that everybody was there for was definitely the three bills being heard and appealed in the Ninth Circuit. That's correct. It was a really interesting experience. You know, a lot of people got there really early and lined up. And it was, there was a lot of energy in the room. But everybody was very quiet and respectful for the most part. There was a couple of laughs.
Some funny moments in the gallery?
Yeah, surprisingly, they lightened the mood a couple times with a couple of jokes, but the three judges had a lot of questions, and it was a long time coming. So for me, it was a big moment. You know, I've just been probably almost 4 years in the making. Now we wait and see what happens. There was great arguments. I feel like we were really well represented. Andy Kimbrell from the Center of Food Safety and Paul Achikoff were both incredible. We just wait and see now. Some people say it could be a couple of months, and some people say it could be up to a year before we actually get a result. So,
Isn't that kind of crazy to think of how long this has been tied up in the courts? And I know that at some point that was a concern for folks that, well, if this gets now taken to the court, to that level, what's going to happen? And we're still going
right.
to, we really don't know. I just to share with listeners, hopefully at 4:30 we'll have Earth Justice lawyer Paul Achitoff joining us as well to talk about from his end. He was a busy guy because he was representing Kauai and also Maui. Did I get that right?
I think that's right, yeah.
And was he involved in the Big Island?
It was really interesting to hear their arguments back and forth. It wasn't really discussing the ins and outs of the bill, and it was all about the details of different forms of preemption and what was and wasn't. And so from what I understand, there may very well be different calls made on specific parts of bills.
Mm-hmm.
This is not preempted, this may be, and it's really complicated. So it was really, educational and interesting experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, to think back on two summers ago with Bill 2491 and the public hearing process, and you mentioned people getting there early. I take it nobody camped out in front of the building, nor did they set up tents
or
anything.
There was a smaller form of that, actually, the whole thing. There was people that came really early, passionate supporters of the different bills, and they arrived very early with supplies and breakfast and shout outs. And some of them, I think, as early as 5 in the morning to get in. And then at the 11th hour, a bunch of the chemical industry people showed up and kind of shoved around the corner and in front of everybody and shoved their way in. And so there was kind of like a similar feeling on a much smaller scale and a much mellower scale in a lot of ways, too, because it was a really formal hearing in, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals doesn't come here very often. It was pretty fast, too. We were in there, everything happened, each argument was given a certain amount of time on both sides, and then they go off and deliberate and, I guess, investigate both sides of the different legal aspects of preemption.
Right, and that being the, if you will, the sticky wicket, preemption, whose kuleana is this? In some ways, it sounded like there was not really kind of a question about regulation. It was just who's going to regulate.
Exactly. It was not to do with whether we deserve to have buffer zones or pesticide disclosure or whether GMOs are good or bad. It was really looking at the ins and the outs of each bill. And each bill is very different. So there's very different concerns and legalities around each one. So each one was individually represented and the similar representation of the same lawyers on both sides, kind of. But, mm-hmm. but still, each one was very, very unique.
And it sounds like we're going to be having to just be patient for the robed ones to issue their decree, whether this the standing or the bills as written or the ordinance as presented, that they will have, if you will, their integrity shored up, or that they will be struck down, and that there's going to be a need for either side to kind of figure out, well, how do we move forward in the future for pesticide regulation, agriculture in general, food and food security and food sovereignty. All of these are intertwined. Fern, I want to just step back and allow you to share how come you went yesterday. How did you get involved with this, and why is this an issue important to us?
Thanks, Jimmy. Well, you know, I've been involved in this the development of 2491 or Bill 960 now since its conception, and you know, very heavily throughout the process of getting it passed and then and overturning the mayoral veto. I also went to Switzerland in 2015 to ask Syngenta to stop suing us along with Gary Hooser. So I've been very heavily involved in the process the entire time, and I will continue to be, really, but it was a big part of the appeals that we've been waiting for years for them to hear this appeal since the federal court ruled that we were preempted and we weren't able to enact the law. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this is actually probably almost a decade of effort all up, and I just had to be there. It was just a moment I needed. You know, it was emotional for me to hear some of the arguments against. They frustrate you sometimes when you do feel like you understand the issue as well as you might think you do. And so for me, it was kind of emotional at some points when I heard things said, and it's hard to not want to just say something sometimes, like, well, that's not true, or this, you know, what about, you know, this? But we had incredible lawyers do that for us, and so, you know, hopefully Paul can share some of the ins and outs of that later when he's on. But we were just really well represented, and so, you know, I followed it very passionately, the debate back and forth, particularly with 2491, because it has been such a big part of my life for the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And for listeners, and if you have access to Facebook, Cartoon Court Report, excellent work done by
awesome
Lauren.
Lauren did amazing.
Yes, absolutely critical to get information and analysis. And I had a exchange with one of our fellow residents here on Kauai who wanted to know what happened yesterday, and I posted a link to Cartoon Court Report, and he was a little miffed that it was propaganda and cartoonish, childish cartoonish, what was the if you will, value of posting that link. But I just ask folk, if you want to find out what happened yesterday in great detail, go to Cartoon Court Report and see the work of Lauren Rego, an activist from Maui who has been, like you, Fern, involved in the struggle and wanting to...
Yeah, for a long time, and she did an amazing job. Honestly, like, people might say that, but they don't understand how hard it is to get footage inside the courtroom. And you know, for many of these cases, there is no way to have, like, recorders, and you're not allowed to take pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she's really done an incredible job of getting the key things that are coming out of both sides. And getting that into a way that people can really easily kind of summarize. You can also see this one online. There are a couple of YouTube copies of this, and that we did have Civil Beat and another camera that was approved inside. So they've actually got this on. Is if people do want to, they can I don't know what the exact link is off the top of my head, but it is available on YouTube. You can get the Ninth Circuit, the entire hearing, if people want to listen.
Yeah, so that is possible if you YouTube the Ninth Court, and I'll look at it here over a break, but there is a YouTube link that the federal court actually provides that service so that folks can kind of follow along. Mostly boring detail stuff to the majority of people, but if you have kind of an interest, and I would say, yes, Fern, you definitely have an interest in this, that it's incredible information to find out. I was able to kind of do some multitasking while I was convalescing yesterday, and just was glad to be able to refer to Lauren Rego's work on Cartoon Court Report, just to get more details as far as the sequence of events yesterday, opening up with the, if you will, opening statements and arguments, and then rebuttals by the lawyers and the, if you will, legal eagles that are representing both the counties, the people, and the corporation. Sure was, if you will, convoluted in some ways, just how different the three counties approached the same issue, if you will, GMO, experimental agriculture, and the, if you will, concerns related to pesticides in that type of agriculture. Fern, what do you think in regards to the future? What do you hope to see happen, and how do you see people getting engaged that are concerned about all of these topics?
Well, I really see positive things in the future. I see a younger generation that's becoming more and more active and figuring out ways that, that we can create solutions for really changing agriculture to be a positive job-producing quality industry that produces food for Hawaii. And I feel positive about the future overall, because I feel like, you know, change is often slow, but Hawaii has made incredible progress over a relatively short amount of time. And I just think that, you know, we're on the verge of really transforming agriculture for the better here. And I'm excited to be a part of it. And I really encourage people to learn. There's many different ways and avenues now, and to be involved, and just encourage people to reach out and do so, because it's really a great time. It's a great time in Hawaii for agriculture, and I believe that we're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. And Fern, I appreciate you taking the time and effort to talk to us about yesterday's proceedings in the Ninth Circuit Court, the appellate judges that came down to hear three cases. Kind of interesting that everything was lumped together on the same day, but it made sense in regards to a logistical question of how do these judges and our lawyers and representatives, how are they going to be able to present? They have to go all the way to San Francisco, since that's where
usually they do. Yes,
right. And so they came
rarely
out.
Rarely, Hawaii gets to host them, so it was a really it was a good time for them to do it, really, so that more people from Hawaii could be there and witness it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would not have been able to attend if it was in San Francisco like it usually is.
Right. And what did you get a sense from the questioning by the three judges from the mainland?
You know, it's really hard to tell. A lot of the questions are really detailed into the different aspects of the law, but there was a lot of questions. Yeah, it's really hard to conjecture for that. I'll leave some of that to Paul, who knows a little bit more about the legal aspects of all that, because for me it was a really new experience being in the courtroom like that, and
mm-hmm.
hearing the arguments over details of implied and explicit preemption. So.
Right, and case law and references to that that don't make any sense to the, if you will, mortal listener, but for those with learned background.
Important things were brought up, like Citizens United and
mm-hmm.
corporate interests, and it was a really interesting experience, and I just am really looking forward to hearing what they decide and the details of what they decide and what the next steps are, because I believe that a lot of these changes are going to be statewide initiatives that really kind of provide better protections and direction for all of Hawaii.
And there we go. Well, Fern, for listeners who just joined us, I'm speaking with Fern Rosensteel. She was quite involved in the drafting of Bill 2491 with council members Tim Bynum and Gary Hoosier, with Ohana Kauai doing, if you will, the boots on the ground type of work of rallying people and organizing. Fern, you are running for House of Representative in District 14. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And good luck with your campaign. We'll have you back
Thank
on
you
the
so
air
much.
To talk about state issues that way and issues that affect the North Shore and the east side of Kauai, District 14, running from Kapa'a and Wailua all the way up to the end of the road and beyond on the north and east side of our island. Fern Rosensteel, thanks for joining us. Any last comments you'd like to share with us before we let you go back to work?
No, thank you so much, Jimmy. It's great to be on the air with you, and I really appreciate all that you do in KQCR and the awesome service you provide our community.
Well, thank you
so much.
Mahalo for joining us, Fern, and we look forward to having you back on, and thanks for catching up with us.
Awesome. Thanks. Have a great day.
Aloha. That was Fern Rosensteel. She is taking time from work so that she can update us on yesterday's events in the, let me see if I can get it right, it's the, 9th Circuit Appellate Court, and there was three judges, Mary Morguaya, Chief Judge Sidney Thomas, and Consuelo Calaban, or Callahan, maybe that's it, Consuelo Callahan, and there was the County of Kauai and their case, represented by David Meekin, I believe, as well as Paul Achitoff from Earth Justice. Paul will be joining us here on the air very shortly. He's got, he said, 10 to 15 minutes to kind of update us. So just wanted to try to keep listeners informed on this action related to the outstanding debate of genetically engineered crops and the pesticides used with those crops, as well as the testing of different compounds here on Kauai and throughout the state. It's a concern for many and has been debated in many different forums, and we're still not too far along that path as to understanding the issues. Plenty of misinformation out there. I try not to spread that, but it's hard when it's just coming at you from many different sources. Facebook isn't always the best at sharing information that way, but it is one that is readily available to us in computer land, and I will try to post some links. I was getting some information from Lauren Rego's Cartoon Court Report. I have a hard time saying that. Might have Lauren join us later on this summer as she continues to do her work. She is based on Maui, I think on Oahu now, and she's taking care of two, if you will. So hopefully she can continue to do that, and mahalo to her for making it out to Oahu to cover some of the issues. Let me just share some of the information on that port. It was the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. There was the case 14-1683, which is Syngenta Seeds Incorporated versus County of Kauai. The other case was the Hawaii Papaya Industry Association versus the County of Hawaii, and that's related to the moratorium that or the ban that Hawaii County was considering and tried to put into effect. And then there was also Robert Ito Incorporated versus County of Maui. We'll find out a little bit more about that, how that was represented in court, and what were we trying to figure out the standing and who should represent and who has legal authority in that matter. And another case from Maui was Alika Ate versus the County of Maui. Got a phone call coming on up. We'll bring you up like that. Caller, are you there?
I am, Jimmy. It's Felicia.
Aloha, Felicia. Thanks for joining us.
And I was listening to what you're talking about, so I am putting these videos of the events on the timeline, on your timeline, and on KKCR's timeline, so people can see.
Terrific.
Both the separated out one of Kauai and then the entirety of all of it. And a few little pieces that I think are, to me, interesting. I really appreciated Fern being there. Gary Hooser was there also.
Felicia, you were there?
Yes.
Oh, right on. So what was your sense of the courtroom decorum and the quizzing by the panel of judges?
Well, I thought the judges were actually very good. Callahan is the last name of the third woman that you, I mean, the third person that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they asked good questions. And, you know, it's going to be 3 months to a year before most likely that we will hear an outcome. Something that to me was unfortunate is Kauai went first, and we had the strongest case. Then Kauai went second. Each one had a different point of law. You said Paul's coming on, and he will be able to speak to that much more effectively than myself. The last one was Maui, and Maui County did not appeal it. Only the Shaka movement did. And the Molokai folks were not allowed to do an intervener status. So that was a little frustrating for them. But, you know, all these cases were really related. And Marjorie Bronster, who was the, you know, she used to be the attorney general, and she represents the industry. And her big point, she was talking about Dillon's Rule, which is a court case from almost 100 years ago that basically says that political subdivisions like the counties don't have as much authority as the state. And her big point was this is a really centralized state, that there's just like one school district. And,
right.
But when Paul comes on, he'll do a great job. I have to say all of our attorneys from Andrew Kimbrell, Paul Achtoff, and then Mickens, I don't know him personally, but they really argued well for us. And what I was saying about Fern and Gary, something that struck me is Scott Enright, who is, the head of the Department of Agriculture, he wasn't there. I didn't see any representatives from the governor's office. When counties, you know, governments are being sued, and they don't even bother to show, that was discouraging for me. You know, there's a lot of dynamics that go on in the court. One thing that was interesting is they had what felt like courtroom bouncers at the front, and people had been waiting since early in the morning to get in, and they let the industry people in ahead of the miscellaneous citizens who maybe had been waiting for a lot longer. That was certainly something that was noticed. The courtroom was really crowded, and there was an overflow area upstairs, and there's a lot of bonding that goes on from each of the islands, and I think that just the fact that all these cases are there where the companies are the plaintiffs. Usually it's the people that are the plaintiffs. It's a sign of victory, you know, that we're making progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that the people, rather than the corporations, are able to define what they want in their community. It doesn't have to be that nobody wants those companies, but it should be up to the people, not companies, to be able to say. So I could go on and on, but you're going to have Paul calling in, Paul Ashtoff.
I'm going to call him, and I just tried. I got their voice messages, so I'm going to have to try again. But thanks, okay. Felicia, for sharing your mana'o and for also being there for bearing witness to yesterday's proceedings. It's quite a big story, if you will. And I know folks were hoping that there was going to be a decision today, but it sounds like that decision isn't going to be forthcoming. It's going to be a while before they look at all of the sides.
It will be a while. And what I guess what I started to say, and to make this point one more time, is that when they say this is not county, but it's a state issue, well, people like Cliff Suji, who's the representative and the head of the Agriculture Committee, who puts any effort by the people to have the state help them, dead in their tracks. One individual can just knock all the people's efforts away from doing it. You know, that's problematic. They should show up and hear these things. And so, really, our representative, you know, our senator, it would be nice if they would be there. Even if they're watching it in silence, it's good for the people to see that they actually care and they're showing when it matters.
Right.
And, okay, I mean, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Felicia. Appreciate you calling in and likewise being there.
Okay, and so people can see it on your Facebook page and on the KKCR Facebook page and mine.
Appreciate that.
All right. Take care.
Aloha. And I'm trying to multitask, calling Paul Achitoff at Earth Justice. Hopefully he'll be able to join us here shortly. I'm going to get back to my Warren Zevon, kind of cut that one out a little bit closer than I wanted to. So we'll just start over again. Why not? I can do that on, maybe not. Yeah, I think I got to go right here instead. We'll take a quick little break musically. Hopefully I have Paul on the line. Paul Achitoff, are you there?
I am.
And you can hear me.
Yep.
Perfect. I'll pop down to Pink Floyd, and we'll talk to Paul Achitoff, a lawyer for Earth Justice. Before we go too far into it, Paul, Earth Justice, what is Earth Justice, and why are you involved in these cases?
Well, Earth Justice is a national nonprofit environmental organization that represents clients in court on environmental cases. And we're involved in this because Earth Justice for quite a long time has been involved in trying to improve various aspects of the agricultural situation, whether it's pesticides or genetic engineering or, you know, related issues. So we got involved in this particular battle that was in court yesterday several years ago when Kauai County started its process of drafting and enacting the ordinance that ended up being enacted as Ordinance 960.
Mm-hmm.
And we also were involved when the Big Island County Council started doing their ordinance, which they enacted. And we didn't have much to do with the Maui situation. That was, a grassroots effort that we can take no credit for. And we've pretty much been just an observer with respect to that, although we did attempt to intervene in that lawsuit when that ordinance on Maui was challenged, but the judge would not let us get involved.
Mm-hmm. Paul, for listeners who aren't maybe familiar with Maui and the Big Islands cases, can you briefly provide just a synopsis of both those counties' effort and the cases that were heard yesterday?
Sure. Well, on the Big Island, the county council passed an ordinance that was ultimately signed by the mayor that the effect of it was to freeze any growing of genetically engineered crops at whatever was in existence at the time the ordinance was passed a couple of years ago. So in other words, if you're already growing a genetically engineered crop, you could continue to grow it, but you couldn't expand it. If you weren't already growing it, you couldn't start. If you were growing papaya, if you wanted to grow papaya, genetically engineered papaya, you could do that because papaya was grandfathered in by that ordinance. It didn't restrict growing of genetically engineered papaya at all, although it required that if you were going to grow it, you needed to register. The Maui situation was done because the county council on Maui was not interested in helping that effort. They were opposed to regulating genetic engineering. The community gathered signatures and put it on the ballot as an initiative. And ultimately, the initiative passed by a vote, majority vote, and that initiative put a moratorium on all genetically engineered crops being grown within Maui County until studies could be done to assess the safety of those crops.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those ordinances were challenged by the industry, and the court, in the case of Kauai and the Big Island, Magistrate Judge Curran, and in the case of Maui, District Judge Mulway, all concluded that the ordinances were preempted by either state and or federal law. And preemption just means that it's a doctrine that says that the state gets to control what the counties do. If the state wants to, the state can say, well, we're the only ones that can regulate in this area. And the same with respect to the federal government. If the federal government says, we think that this is a subject that only the federal government should be able to regulate, the federal government can do that. But there are legal tests that the court has to look at to see whether, in fact, that was the intention of the government to be exclusive in that way. And that was really what was going on in these hearings yesterday, was the court was reviewing whether, in fact, the legislature in Hawaii intended to exclusively regulate genetically engineered crops, and the extent to which the federal government intended to exclusively regulate genetically engineered crops.
Well, thanks for providing that little definition of preemption. It did seem like that was a sticking point. You made mention of case law. Richardson was brought up. What was the Richardson case, and what does that refer to?
Well, Richardson was a case that went up to the Hawaii Supreme Court some years back. It had to do with an ordinance that was passed that allowed for the conversion of leasehold interests in condominiums to give that ownership to the leaseholder. In other words, it was a conversion of the lease into a fee interest that the leaseholder could then own. It was a way to have those people who were leasing condominiums actually be able to own the condominiums.
Mm-hmm.
And the certain interests that didn't want that ordinance to be on the books said, you know what, this ordinance is preempted by state law. Hawaii has various laws that cover this situation that demonstrate that the Hawaii legislature intended that only the state can regulate anything like this. And the Richardson court looked at whether this was true, and it looked at all of these different statutes that Hawaii already had that regulated various related subjects of eminent domain and different kinds of regulation of condominiums and so forth. And the court went through each of these laws and tried to see whether, in fact, these laws were intended by the legislature to preempt any local regulation like the one that the county had tried to pass,
mm-hmm.
or did pass.
Right.
And what the court decided was that, no, the legislature regulated a lot of different things that were kind of similar in certain ways, but they actually didn't regulate this specific subject matter of this ordinance. So the Richardson case, everyone agreed yesterday, was a key Hawaii law precedent, and we simply argued you apply that precedent to the situation with genetic engineering, and you see that Hawaii has a number of laws. They have about, you know, various plant problems like quarantine laws, noxious weed laws, so forth, but they have never regulated or tried to regulate genetically engineered crops. And that was the essence of our argument with respect to state law, that Hawaii has no law. They've never tried to regulate it. They've never demonstrated any intent that only the state could possibly regulate these types of crops, and therefore the counties have the right to do it.
And that's, if you will, the central argument on the County of Kauai's case, that the county does have a right. If the state isn't, that the county can. Am I getting that right?
The state has said, you know, we, in some way, if they have either said or implied that they want only the state to do it, then the counties have a right to do it. Because all the counties have been granted by the state what's called the police power, which is a broad authorization to enact any kind of ordinance that the county feels is necessary and appropriate to protect health, life, and property. And a lot of the laws that the counties pass are based on their authority to protect health, life, and property. So this was an example where Kauai County and all the other counties felt like, well, these crops and their pesticide use presents a threat to health, life, or property, and we want to protect the people and their property.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they passed the ordinance. And the industry argued, well, you can only do that if the state hasn't said you can't. And here the state has said that you can't because they've passed these other laws. So in the case of the Kauai statute in particular, it was about pesticides as well as genetically engineered crops. And Hawaii does have a pesticide law. And that law covers a variety of topics having to do with pesticide use. So the argument there was whether or not the legislature, when it passed this pesticide law, intended that be the only law in the state of Hawaii that can possibly regulate any aspect of pesticide use. And that's what the industry was arguing, that yes, that's it. You want that only the state can do it through that law.
Mm-hmm.
And our argument was that law covers a lot of ground, but it's not the exclusive law of regulating pesticides. It doesn't address any of the issues Kauai Ordinance 2491 attempted to regulate, like buffer zones and a disclosure of spraying of pesticides and things like that. They're just not covered by that law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the outline of what the arguments were yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly appreciate you taking time from your busy schedule to update us on yesterday's activities in the Ninth Circuit Court. How I asked Fern a little bit about this. For you, how often do you present in front of this this body? And was yesterday an extraordinary day for you?
Well, it was extraordinary in the sense that there were multiple cases all being heard on the same day, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, unusual in the sense that multiple cases that I'm involved in personally, that I've worked very hard on, that mean a lot to me and a lot to the community. So it was unusual in that respect. I think that there was more attention given to these arguments than any of the other arguments that I have done. However, I have argued in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals a number of times before over the years. In fact, one of the judges who was on this panel, Judge Sid Thomas, who's now the Chief Judge of the Ninth Circuit, I have argued in front of him at least four times before over the years. So, you know, I've done a few of those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
But this one means a lot to me and obviously a lot of other people.
Let me ask you this. Why does it mean a lot to you, Paul?
It means a lot to me because for a number of reasons. First, this is an issue that I think affects a lot of people in a very personal way. There are people on Kauai and elsewhere who are faced with, on a daily basis, the effects of living near hundreds or thousands of acres of crops that are heavily sprayed with pesticides on a constant basis. And, you know, these people, their families, are exposed to this, and they're not being protected. And the state is not doing anything that I can tell to ensure that there aren't any effects. And as folks on Kauai are well aware, the joint fact-finding report outlined some of those issues and the lack of information, the lack of monitoring, the lack of action from the state side and the federal side. So I feel strongly that particularly where there isn't protection, the counties have a right, if not a duty, to protect people by getting involved and doing what the county councils in this case have done.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that, you know, I've worked for probably more a dozen years or so on genetic engineering cases, because I feel that it's a very pervasive problem, not only on Kauai or in Hawaii, but around the country and around the world. I think it's not a healthy thing for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it causes more and more pesticide use, and there's a variety of other problems associated with it. And the federal government has just supported the industry, I think, rather blindly. And I think there should be some controls on it, and at a bare minimum, if not banned entirely. So, and pesticides, I think, are also a very widespread problem around the world. They are very potent chemicals that I think people don't realize just how toxic these chemicals are. And on Kauai, I think people got a taste of that recently when, just a few months ago, some of the workers over at Syngenta's facilities were taken to the hospital because they walked into a field that had been sprayed with a pesticide, chlorpyrifos, almost 24 hours beforehand. And they just walked into this field and they felt so sick that they had to be taken to the hospital. And, you know, people do get sick. People die from exposure to pesticides. They're very potent chemicals, and they're all around, and on Kauai in particular, they're just the use of these chemicals is very intensive, and I don't feel that our government takes a close enough look at the impacts of these chemicals on people, but they tend to side with the industry, who just continually swears about how safe these things are. And I don't think that's right. So,
well, bless you for that work.
That's part of the reason why it means a lot to me.
Yeah, I just really mahalo you for taking this on. I know that it's a lot of work and a lot of time being invested in this. I hope that others are as appreciative as I am. I know that they are, your involvement with Earth Justice and taking on this case for the people and the county. Paul Achitoff, lawyer for Earth Justice, we have on the radio. Paul, last comments or last thoughts that you'd like to share before I let you go?
Well, I just want to, you asked whether people appreciate it, and I just want to say I get a lot of supportive comments from people, which I really do appreciate, and I thank people for letting me know that, you know, they're following this and it's important to them. And of course, you know, the whole movement behind these ordinances is a grassroots movement that, you know, the people on the ground are the ones who deserve the credit for that. I'm just a lawyer trying to defend that effort, but if the people of Kauai had not done what they did in terms of, you know, showing up, testifying, demanding more protection, and the county council had not done what it did to make sure that these ordinances were passed, there wouldn't be anything for me to defend. So I think, you know, it's the people of Kauai and the people on the county council who are the real heroes here, and my hat's off to them.
Well, thank you, Paul, and I look forward to discussing more as this becomes better understood by us all. Any prognosis as to when we might hear, if you will, an outcome or decision from the appellate court?
Well, that can take anywhere from a few months to more than a few months. You know, I have seen the court take as long as almost a year to come out with a decision, but on the other hand, it could come out within, you know, 3 or 4 months. So that's about the best I can say.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, about 4 or 5 cases yesterday that were all heard. They have to, there's a bunch of different issues. There's 3 judges that have to figure out how they're going to vote because, you know, they each get to decide whether what they think the right answer is. And if they don't agree with it, they can file a dissenting opinion. So, you know, that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got all these other cases too.
And is this a 2-1, 3-0? Is there?
No, if it's 2-1, then that's the decision that there is.
The majority rules that this is,
yep,
going to stand or do what it does.
Right.
Amazing. Again, Paul Achitoff with Earth Justice, representing the people and the counties against the industry that wants to continue with business as usual. Thank you so much for joining us here on Kauai Community Radio.
Thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Aloha, Paul Achitoff. I'm going to get back to the music here. Botch it up the first time. We'll try not the second time. And then take you to the top of the hour with that.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
This is Ron Whaley, KKCR, Hanalei. And KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio.
That's right. You are listening to Kauai Community Radio, 90.9 FM Hanalei, 91.9 FM Islandwide, 92.7 in Anahola, Moloa'a, and 104.7 on the gathering place of Oahu. The cable guy will find us at 95.1 and streaming worldwide at www.kkcr.org. It is Thursday, the 16th of June. Moving into the second part of the show, second hour. I've got hopefully some phone calls coming in place. I'm going to check my emails to see if anything's changed, but I was in touch with Kipu Kai Kualii and Renee Hamilton from the YWCA. They were mentioned in an article just recently on, let's see, when was that? Try to pull that up if I can. An article in the Garden Island referring to the tragedy in Orlando as well as the vigil that will be held tomorrow evening around, oh, I want to say it is at, here we go, 6:45. 6:45 will be the, hold on, I'm going to do something I don't do all the time, answer the phone and talk on the radio at the same time, but aloha, is this Renee? Renee, I'm going to put you on hold and then... Oh, terrific. Well, we'll be bringing you guys up here. Let me just put you on hold. I'll shut that down and bring you on up this way. Renee, are you there?
Yes.
Lovely. I didn't. My fat fingers didn't get in the way this time.
All right.
Well, thank you for joining us to talk about the Vigil tomorrow, and as well as the Kauai Pride weekend events that are going to be happening at Lydgate Park this weekend. Renee, thanks for joining us here on Kauai.
Sure, no problem.
Community Radio.
Glad to be able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And as well, the unspeakable, the horrible tragedy in Orlando as well.
Right.
let me ask you, where would you like to start?
Well, let's start with, tomorrow night.
Okay.
So, you know, in terms of our Pride weekend, so PFLAG Kauai, which is it stands for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, works closely with Lambda Aloha, another community group on Kauai that focuses on LGBTQ community. We work closely in terms of planning Pride weekend. It's always right around this time of the year in June, because June is Pride everywhere around the world,
mm-hmm.
just about.
Nice.
So, you know, we've had plans set, but obviously Orlando has a very big influence, and not such influence, but really, I think, more overshadowing what we're doing this weekend.
Mm. Gotcha.
And Friday night, tomorrow night, is an added gathering to honor our brothers and sisters of our community and our allies, families, and friends who lost their lives in Orlando. So I know for myself, and I'm sure for many who will be attending Pride weekend or any of the events tomorrow night, you know, this is going to be forefront, I am sure, in our conversations, in our hearts, in our minds, and knowing that our little group here on Kauai, our little Kauai community, we stand together, we share our aloha, and only, you know, wish for peace and that this madness stops,
mm-hmm.
not just in our country, but around the world. So,
And it is definitely a worldwide issue.
Absolutely.
And I think in the article that was in the Garden Island, help me pronounce Noelle's last name.
My last name too, actually.
Hamilton.
Hamilton Combe.
Combe. Okay.
Yes.
A comment that she made that. People think that because we've made stride like gay marriage and transgender rights that we can relax a bit, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Absolutely.
And the hate that's out there affects us all. It's sad to just have it blow up, if you will, in your face,
mm-hmm.
Quite like that. I think, it spurs so many other side conversations about America's proclivity for shooting each other,
mm-hmm.
For demonstrating hate in such a way that so many people suffer.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a targeted group in one of these instances, it's tragic, no matter how you slice it, whether it's in a movie theater or a dance hall.
Yeah.
But it seems that one of the motives of the attacker was to attack the gay community in Orlando.
I think that's very clear. There shouldn't be any question about that, that was part of the motive and why he chose that place,
mm-hmm.
and the people who frequent there. Now, you know, when you hear the stories of the people who also lost their lives, you had moms of gay sons who were there,
mm-hmm.
you know, celebrating with their, or being with their children. You had some straight allies there. So, you know, that misconception of, boy, it doesn't affect me, I don't know anybody who's gay or whatever, you know, there's also straight allies who have been very much a part of the community, who are there standing with us and dancing with us and all that kind of thing. And, you know, we just have to break down these walls and these false ideas of what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely targeted. But, you know, and yes, the majority are LGBT identified. But my goodness, it affects all of us, because it's not just LGBT. it was other people as well. So, you know, I know it's just going to overshadow and just really kind of permeate all of our conversation. We still all wrestle with, what does that mean? You know, is there anything we should be doing differently this weekend? I think all of us are saying, no, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
We come together and we stand solid, and we stand in our love and support of each other and our bigger community, our small community, our brothers and sisters, and our families.
Thank you. Have another phone call. I'm wondering if it might be Kipu Kai. I'm going to see if that's him. Aloha, caller. You just joining us with Renee Hamilton.
Yeah, aloha. It's Kipu Kai.
Aloha, Kipu Kai. Thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box and Kauai Community Radio. I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to a little bit about our discussion.
I was struggling to dial in, and I was getting the number wrong, but I heard just a little bit at the end there.
That's how I was trying to dial in Earth Justice just about 20 minutes ago, getting the wrong number and then the voice answering system. So thank you for joining us in this conversation, obviously talking about the vigil tomorrow and the, if you will, Kauai Pride this weekend. The event that's going on. Tell us a little bit about the weekend event. What do we have in store?
So the weekend is our annual Pride. June is Pride Month across the world, actually. And we celebrate Pride here on Kauai every month with a weekend of activities. As it's worked out for this year, on beginning tomorrow night, Friday night, people are showing up at the Lydgate campgrounds and camping for the weekend. So it'd be kind of cool. I think it'd be more special than usual because some people will be staying together for the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So camp starts tomorrow. Saturday, folks will be gathering at the Lava Lava room or lounge. Or
the Lava Lava lounge on the east side?
Yeah, it's just, I think, starting at 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the usual big dance at a hotel, but I think for budget reasons, they're just keeping it simpler this year. But it's still a chance for everybody to come together and do a social night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Saturday night. And then my favorite part of the Pride weekend is the part that PFLAG helps sponsor, and that's the Sunday potluck picnic that usually goes on from about 11 to 4, and it's people bring, you know, their favorite dishes and whatnot, and we just spend time together and, you know, even do a little bit more and talk a little bit about the things we're working on. Obviously, you know, it's an even more important time this weekend and this year and this month. But at 2:00, we'll have like a short program, and we'll give our annual Pride scholarship to one young person. It's Jade Allen J. Lewis, who's getting our Kauai Pride College Scholarship this year. And then we're also giving a Kauai Pride Community Heroes Award, and that's going to a longtime Kauai couple, Roy Budawan and Lloyd Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's Sunday at Lydgate Park, and underneath the big pavilion, or
it's over by the Kamalani Bridge side.
So on the Kamalani Bridge
campground, so it'll be close to where everybody's camping.
There we go.
So probably that little pavilion over there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a good sized pavilion.
Sure, sure. And the place where people, if they want to get more information about Saturday and Sunday's events, or Friday night as well, where would you direct people to go to get more information about this?
Both Lambda Aloha and PFLAG. So Lambda Aloha and then our PFLAG Kauai chapter. And
we're both on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, they're both on Facebook.
That's good, and I'll try to put some stuff on my wall, as well as on the KKCR Facebook page, so folks can kind of follow along. Kipu Kai, we were talking also about the tragedy in Orlando the impact that it has, this type of the magnitude of that. What are some of your thoughts and sentiments in regards to the aftermath and the work that needs to be done?
I think, you know, in some ways, and for one thing, I mean, personally, it was just heart-wrenching. I think I went to sleep Saturday night just hearing that there was a shooting, you know, and then I woke up Sunday morning and I was like, boy, my goodness, that was a massacre. I mean, 50 people, they said, were killed, and I just, it was just unbelievable, and it was like, I mean, I saw a scene with this mother, and she was, you know, desperately looking for her son, and it just broke my heart. I immediately thought of my own life and my own mom and just how horrible that is.
Right.
We as a community, LGBT community and our straight allies who support us, I mean, it just reminds us how fragile life is sometimes and how when we might not kind of take it for granted because of the aloha and the acceptance and how we are making positive movement in the right direction as a society, that there still is a lot of hate out there, and, you know, and that we still have to be vigilant and we have to support each other and love each other and just...
We're all in this together.
Yeah. You know, one thing I'm really pleased about to a certain degree is that there are at least some... folks out there and some folks like in Congress that like they seem to have had enough and that they're not willing to just do moments of silence anymore. I saw some people walking out from the U.S. Congress saying, we can't be silent, you know, not when something like this happens, and we have to be more vigilant and we have to do what we can, you know. So they're talking a little bit about some gun safety issues that most of America can't even imagine that it's not already in place, you know. And so, I mean, I hope something finally, you know, we start moving a little further with gun safety in honor of all these lives lost and these people.
I think that we're having this conversation because it happened again, and are we just going to continue to have these conversations because it keeps on happening, or are we going to address some of the issues that might help prevent this? Obviously, gun control is one of them. Also, the efforts to provide mental health services for individuals that are just troubled and are in need of help, but aren't getting it. The addressing of the issue of a candidate like Donald Trump, who just kind of, if you will, skated to the top of the Republican candidacy for president, and the rhetoric as well as the vitriol speech that comes from his mouth, we're faced with a society that has multiple issues, and we're just grasping at straws to try to figure it out. What do you think at a local level we could do to help, one, prevent this from ever happening on Kauai, and two, from this type of I don't want to say capitalizing, or I've seen it posted, you know, that to use this tragedy to advance an anti-gun agenda. Everything from even a GMO advocate using this tragedy, suggesting that the hate that is being propagated in so many corners, that the GMO, anti-GMO debate and the hate that's been generated there helps contribute to the hate that manifests in these violent, bloody acts.
I don't even think of it as like an anti-gun agenda. I just think of it about, you know, expressing our humanity and getting our government to be as reasonable as our people are, and getting our government to think about gun safety, you know, and some basic reasonable measures that help, you know, prevent situations like this. I don't think you could ever make it go away completely, because, you know, evil people will find a way to find whatever weaponry they need to create such a horrible situation like this. But it should be more difficult. I mean, that there isn't even basic, you know, measures and restrictions in place for, you know, it's unheard of. I mean, it's just, and I think people are speaking up, so there are more people in Congress that are reacting and perhaps acting. So maybe something will happen.
Maybe
really
something.
Hopeful.
Well, I thank you for being optimistic and being hopeful. Obviously, as a an elected official, as a public servant, you're in a position to kind of help facilitate that conversation. You're in a position to help some of that legislative action. That there's got to be common ground between advocates that say there should be more controls or more regulations to gun advocates and gun right you know, users that say it's our right to, you know, the Second Amendment assures us the right to bear arms.
Mm-hmm. So my father is a hunter. Mm-hmm. I have hunters in my family, and, you know, they have rifles and stuff for hunting, but you don't need an assault weapon that is of a military grade that can, you know, put out 50 bullets in 3 minutes. You know, I mean, there's
sure.
That is just absurd, and I think, you know, that's why when you polled Americans in general, overwhelmingly they get that, you know, but somehow the NRA and the folks that want to prevent any kind of even reasonable gun safety laws, and they argue obviously the thing about, oh, if you give one little bit, then it'll slippery slope to the point where, you know. But it's not taking away people's guns for legitimate uses.
Right.
Even for protection, you know. You don't need to discharge 50 bullets in 3 minutes to protect yourself. You know, and my dad's comment about the hunting was, nobody would use a gun like that. It would just destroy all your meat.
Right.
You know, it's so logical.
Hey, Jimmy, this is Renee. Again, I want to say something in terms of
Please.
Wearing my hat as director of the YWCA. And, you know, when we think about this specific situation and looking at causes, I want to bring it back to also just the daily violence that mm-hmm. happens within our homes.
Sure.
You know, we focus a lot on domestic violence, and when you actually listen to a little bit of what they know about the shooter in Orlando, he had a history of domestic violence. And domestic violence can be a real red flag for future incidents of violence.
Mm-hmm.
If every state had a law like Hawaii where you have to surrender your firearms when you get a restraining order, batterers are not supposed to be able to have firearms. Because women, the majority of murders that happen every single day due to domestic violence, the majority are done with guns.
Mm-hmm. And not assault weapons.
And not assault weapons.
Right.
Exactly. But you would have had, you know, we're talking about somebody like this, the Orlando shooter.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, interviewed by the FBI. So Congress is talking about having, anybody who's on the no-fly list, let's make a law, or can we at least agree that all those people on that list would not be able to buy firearms? How about people who have that history of domestic violence?
Well, that makes good sense to me in a variety of ways. I mean, terrorism is terrorism, whether it's foreign or domestic. You know, the threatening actions of somebody with a weapon or without a weapon, it's still threatening action. And I see that as being kind of a reasonable approach to limit the availability of, if you will, weapons of mass destruction.
Right. And that would have been two safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
If our country, you know, would look at, you know, and that's kind of sad because the Congress won't even allow the CDC to even study the effects of violence or gun violence in our country. It's much broader than the mass shootings. So what's the platform underneath the mass shootings? It's what happens every day in our country.
Right. I just
so we have to look at that wider spectrum of things that happen between strangers, and you know, most people think about gang violence or you know something like that, but what's been going on for years and years and years is domestic violence.
Right, the silent killer
within the home. So if we look at the entire issue, you know, and put really kind of let's go back to the crux of some of this, that would go a long way. and including all that in our conversations of how do we prevent these things from happening.
So I wonder, too, being that we do have this law about surrendering your firearm when you have a TRO taken out on you here in Hawaii, that if Congress, National Congress, takes too long with some of this reasonable stuff, like you're on the terrorist watch list, then you know, don't get to purchase a gun. If the state couldn't make a move and not wait for the federal government, I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, oftentimes it is at the local level, whether it's the county, municipality, or it's the state, that we can get things done, because we know certainly in Washington, the gridlock and the refusal to entertain legislation like that, it just takes so long, and it's sometimes so ineffective. And perhaps that is the approach, is to try to get things happening at the local level.
Yeah, I think the first two things that... because I saw something on the news with Senator Murphy from Connecticut leading the way, and a whole bunch of Democratic senators and, you know, Congress folks, and that there was a 15-hour filibuster, I think, that just ended either early this morning or sometime, and that they actually got the Republican leadership to agree to hold a vote, but the vote would just address the terrorists, watch lists, and I think universal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not saying you can't have your gun. That's just saying, you know, have pass a background check first.
Right.
So you can, you know, take out the potential problem.
Right. That there is a system in place that would catch some of those red flags. Before
in all their polling, they said like Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all like overwhelmingly like 85-95% support these things, these reasonable gun safety restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But with all of America supporting it, it still hasn't happened.
Well, and you have powerful interests like the NRA, that they, you know, if you will, they're going to go to the grave with this fight, as they say, you know. My cold dead fingers around my barrel or whatever. But it seems like we are at a point where, as a society, we have to make some choices. And what, like I said, with the GMO debate, how much pesticide and poison and GE food do we want in our diet? And it's likewise with violence and these types of incidents. How much do we want? What's an acceptable level? And some people are going to say none at all. And we know that we can't just wipe it all out, but can we do more? Can we do better? I would suggest that we can, and that there is common ground between gun advocates and gun control advocates, and that there is a middle path that would maybe not make everybody happy, but certainly reduce the likelihood of these types of incidents from happening ever again.
Right. And, you know, and trying to address, and it's part of what we try to do in terms, and I know that, you know, you've said that in different ways too, Jimmy, in terms of, you know, working on how we see each other and finding those common causes and recognizing that we have a lot more in common than we are different. and it's the emphasis on different or bad or marginal and not as valued, whether we're talking about years and years of domestic violence and non-equality for women or LGBTQ or Muslims or whoever the other group is,
mm-hmm.
you know, those conversations need to continue, and I'm hopeful that we continue to progress, you know, and we start with our own little community first and keep going from there. And
that's why, too, Pride Month every year, every June is so important, because it's mm-hmm. about celebrating the diversity and, you know, coming together and creating awareness and promoting equality and, you know, standing together as a community and showing the larger community who we are and that we exist and that we're, you know, no different, you know. We have all the aspirations in life and, you know.
And that you are people of love and not the hideous creatures or, you know, despicable characters that should be, if you will, sequestered somewhere.
Yeah. And looking for acceptance, dignity, equality, you know.
Mm-hmm. And respect. With that in mind, before you go, can you tell folks about tomorrow as well as activities for the weekend?
So tomorrow is the vigil, right, at 6:45, and we're all getting together at the Wailua River on the Kapa'a end. And it was just a spontaneous thing that some folks got together and said, we have to do this. I mean, just to give people a chance to come together and, you know, express or just be together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to.
And folks could probably park in the Wailua Beach parking lot or the Cocoa Palms parking lot and just walk over across the street.
Yeah, you know, there's the light and crosswalks mm-hmm. and everything, so you could park probably in all three sides. I think there's even a little bit of parking opening there by Cocoa Palms and then there by the Smith's
that's right, on the other
kayak
side. Mm-hmm.
boats. And, you know, at that time, the business is nothing, you know. Hopefully, you'll just have parking.
Mm-hmm.
They could always walk over the bridge, too, from the
hotel side.
Aloha Beach side. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're calling it Aloha. It's a different name now.
The Kauai Hilton Garden, I think.
From the Heiau over
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And the path.
Mm-hmm. And then folks are gathering at 6:45. That will go for an hour or two into the
yeah,
early evening hours.
How many people are there and how
mm-hmm.
much, you know,
mm-hmm.
happens.
And then Saturday, you guys will be
at the Lava Lava. I keep messing up the name.
Lava Lava
Beach Club.
Oh, there we go. There we go. The Lava Lava Beach Club.
Saturday.
Mm-hmm. From 6 to 10.
Beach Club. 6 p.m. to 10 p.m.
All righty. And then Sunday is an all day.
Sunday is our Pride potluck picnic, and that's over at the campgrounds or.
I actually think it's at the Lydgate.
Oh, wait, yeah, the big park
pavilion.
So where it's always been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be there Sunday at Lydgate Park and at the
pavilion,
big pavilion.
Lydgate Park.
Sunday,
right.
Father's Day.
11 a.m. to 4.
Oh, there you go.
Potluck lunch.
Potluck lunch.
We'll have some drinks and things, but.
You going to have music?
Always have music.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, Renee and Kipukai, thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box. And mahalos for the work that you're doing in our community. I look forward to hopefully seeing you this weekend sometime. And again, just thanks for helping to be that beacon of light and offering opportunities for us to come together and share and have hope for the future.
Well, mahalo to you, too, for being a progressive ally and for helping us put the word out to our community and our supporters.
Well, thank you. Aloha,
right,
Kipukai,
and
Renee.
All righty. Aloha.
Aloha. And I'm going to do some of this that I forgot to do earlier on because I just get all carried away in this stuff.
If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org. Click on the contact link and take our listener survey. or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Dove presents Monifest 3, Xavier Rudd, Bobby Alou, Shiloh Pa, Sashimon, Root Hub, and more. Sunday, June 26th, at the Church of the Pacific Outdoor Amphitheater. Gates open at noon, show starts at 1 p.m., Xavier Rudd starts at 7 p.m. Tickets at Hanalei Harvest Market, Kilauea Healthy Hut, Papayas Natural Foods in Kapa'a, Progressive Expressions in Koloa. All ages welcome. More information at dovepresents.com, 635-5556. Monifest 3 with Xavier Rudd from Australia, Sunday, June 26th.
The Kekahu Foundation's Board of Directors is holding its regular meeting on Wednesday, June 22nd, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Kapa'a Library. This meeting is open to the public and you are invited to attend. For more information, call KKCR at 826-7774.
Aloha, KKCR Ohana. Kauai Community Radio is constantly evolving. In January, we will begin the 2016 KKCR Strategic Plan, and you are invited. In a series of public meetings, group discussions, collaborative workshops, and awesome station parties, we will review and rededicate ourselves to the future of Kauai Community Radio. Please get involved in the future of your radio station by emailing strategicplan@kkcr.org and stay tuned for more updates about the KKCR Strategic Plan and mahalo for your participation.
KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K224CQ Anahola K284AL Haleiwa.
There we go. And I also want to say thank you for our underwriters and the good folks at Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, and Kauai Compassion and Compare. Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Neil Norman represents buyers and sellers of properties throughout the Hawaiian Islands. Neil is grateful for Hawaii's continued embrace, supports organic farming, beekeeping, and sustainable agriculture, and stands with KKCR on its mission to provide a much-needed voice and forum for Hawaii's diversity of cultures. Mahalo.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
There we go. Mahalo's for supporting Kauai Community Radio. You know, without our underwriters and listeners like you, we don't make that $60,000 goal for our fund drive. And I just want to thank the 173 new members and the folks that were part of our spring membership drive. Mahalo's for joining us here at Kauai Community Radio. And if you would like to continue to give, you may go to our website, www.kkcr.org, and there is a donate tab, and you feel free to share the love, because that's the way this radio station works, is by your support and by volunteers, much like Brother Dove, who will be coming up here with his evolutionary radio in about 20 minutes. He'll be followed up by Slim and the Mystery Train, and wrapping up the day's events of fun and frivolity with a little music is the Loco Moco Show coming up at 10 o'clock with our cousin Pete Cameron. Old PC will be here, the Commodore. So I got to play a couple things here that caught my attention. This was, I don't know, maybe some of you got a chance to hear a preacher in Sacramento, California, was preaching a little bit of hate. And I think folks in Sacramento are a little perturbed about this, but this was posted by a cousin from Sacramento, and I'm going to play this. Hopefully you'll get what he's talking about, It's a fiery little sermon about hypocrites and all that stuff. Check this out. Oh, maybe not. How come? We're going to try. Queued it up. We'll see if we get it happening. Sometimes the buffering is... I'm suffering with the buffering, if you know what I mean. Falling back. A little background music. I also want to just open up the phone lines, 826-7771. Yep. That was 21 Pilots, song that I've been hearing a lot lately. My daughter's a fan, and I'm starting to enjoy it too. In the background, you hear some Pink Floyd. The album. Metal. Echoes. Eight two six seven 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 one. If you'd like to join the conversation, I did attempt to try to get some perspective on this debate about guns, guns control. Did get a chance to read something. I'll share with you an article by Helen Ubina. She's a columnist. I found this online at the SF Gate site. It's a San Francisco Chronicle. And let's see if we can. Get up from the start. And the article by Helen Urbina, 7 minutes. That's how long it took for me to buy an AR-15, the semi-automatic rifle used in the deadliest mass shooting in modern American history. 7 minutes from the moment I handed the salesperson my driver's license to the moment I passed my background check. It likely would take more time than that during the forthcoming round of vigils to respectfully read the names of the more than 100 people who were killed or injured. It's obscene. Surprising to some, perhaps, though it shouldn't be, not at this point in our bloody, hate-filled history. If it weren't so easy to get a gun in this country, the 29-year-old gunman who went on a shooting rampage in a popular gay nightclub in Orlando on Sunday wouldn't have been able to buy the weapon he used to kill 49 people and injure 53. If it weren't so easy to get a gun in this country, another gunman who came before him wouldn't have been able to use the same kind of firearm to kill elementary school children in Newtown, Connecticut. If it weren't so appallingly easy to get a gun in this country, it wouldn't be easy for the next gunman to deliver the kind of carnage that is much a part of this country as the American flag. And there will undoubtedly be a next one. This has been said, but bears repeating and repeating and repeating some more. If nothing changed after children were slaughtered in their school, do any of us really believe anything will change after the death of people so many fear and loathe simply for trying to live their truths? The gunman was apparently enraged over seeing a same-sex couple kiss. Think about that. Love enraged him. Love made him kill. But I try not to think about any of that as I drive over to the gun shop in Philadelphia. I need to come up with some plausible story, I think. What if I'm asked why, a day after this massacre, I want to buy the very type of gun used to slaughter people at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando? I consider my options. I'm a woman who wants to have a rifle for safety reasons. I'm a gun enthusiast with a soft spot for military-style rifles. Thank you. I'm a card-carrying member of the NRA who is afraid the government will be coming for my guns. Turns out I don't need a story. The AR-15 is on display in the window of a gun shop. It is promoted as the gun of the week. What will it take to buy one, I ask the sales guy. Do I have identification? Yes. Am I a U.S. citizen? Yes. Bingo, the friendly gun shop guy says. All we have to do is fill some paperwork out. And I filled out more paperwork at the doctor's office for a routine checkup than I did on Monday afternoon. I felt a little squeamish about not telling him who I was and what I was trying to do, but this wasn't about them. They weren't doing anything illegal. The truth is that I could have bought the gun as easily in any gun shop in Pennsylvania. I just didn't realize how easily. Go to a licensed gun store, fill out a page and a half of forms, wait, if that's really the right word for it, for an instant background check, and then pay the man. I told the guy I was on a budget, so I got an AR-15 for $759.99. God bless America. No need for a concealed carry permit. No mandatory training, though the guys did give me a coupon for a free day pass for a local gun range. No need for even a moment to at least consider how gross all this felt as relatives of the dead were still being notified. To be fair, there was an extra 10 or 15 minutes or so of chit-chat inside the gun store before I walked out with a cardboard box with the words Smith & Wesson emblazoned on it and an atta girl for thinking ahead and buying the most popular rifle in the country before there's a run on the gun from the nervous gun owners who fear a ban on them. Yeah, because it was about the gun, not Islamic terrorism, right? A man buying a gun offered, unsolicited. Here we go, I thought. The fact is, what shattered so many lives in the early hours Sunday was about many things. Homophobia, first and foremost. Radicalism, the American gunman claimed allegiance to the Islamic State and praised the Boston Marathon bombers. Even if that's not true, the radicals won't have a problem with that. Mental illness. And yes, guns. Insane, nonsensical access to guns. So pick whatever reason or narrative matches your politics or agenda. Have at it, because the truth is that while they all play a part, what's really destroying this country is fear and hate. A festering fear and hate that we better think about when it's time to vote for our next president, because the fear and hate is not all coming from the outside. It's not all from some unnamed foreign boogeyman. Increasingly, it's from within, from down the street, the next state over, the next potential leader of this country. As I walked to my car with my brand new gun, I wasn't sure what to do with it. I didn't want it, but I also didn't want it in anyone else's hands either. So I drove to the Philadelphia Police Department, 6th District, where I seemed to stump more than a few officers when I explained who I was and what I wanted to do. Have you ever tried to turn in a gun in this city? Spoiler alert, it takes longer than it does to buy a gun. As an officer prepared the paperwork, I noticed a sign that hung on the walls. United we stand, it read. My God, I thought, what a lie. We are more divided every single day, and yet our answers to that is met to meet fear and hate with more fear and hate, and then expect a different outcome. To be shocked at the world we live in, left to do little else but hold vigils. While we're mourning the dead, let us mourn the national loss of humanity that is to blame for this world we have created. And let us take more than 7 minutes to do it. This was written by Helen Ubinas, a columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. I saw this in the SF Gate news blog that they post online. I think I have somebody waiting on hold. Sorry for that. Are you still there? Hello, caller?
Yes.
Yes, caller, thank you. You are live on the air.
Okay. Has anybody ever gotten upset when they drive through Kapaa Town going south? Right there at the turnoff to KCFC U Bank and Napa Auto Parts is a gun seller. He has some sort of a van that's set up with a big sign saying his phone number, and he's been there about a year now, and before that he was never there. And I don't know if he's got a permit to sell guns there or even to have his truck parked there with his advertisement all over it. He's certainly not on private property. He's on public property, or he's on city, county property. So what right does he have to set up his whole outfit there and publicize the fact that he's selling guns and he's a gun dealer.
I imagine a phone call to the county to find out if he's in violation of any type of regulation or ordinance that says you can't have signs or you can't park vehicles with advertisement on county property. I'm not sure. I don't have an answer. I'm just speculating what would be the way to find out.
Well, the reason I say this is because for the last hour, I guess, or a couple hours, everybody's been talking about, you know, of course, what happened in Orlando was incredibly sad, was tragic, was horrible. But right here in Kapaha Town, where I never ever saw a gun seller there all the time I've lived here, more than 15 years, and suddenly, in the last year, he's parked there every day. And when I drive past there, and the first time I ever saw it, made me feel horrible to see that in Kapaha Town. I was like, why is this man advertising that he has guns for sale? And everybody said, oh, yeah, well, maybe they're hunting guns. But it's more than hunting guns, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
He's a connection to gun sellers.
Right. But, I mean, it's legal to sell guns in this country. It's not an illegal activity, provided you...
No, it's not an illegal activity, but to be set up on a county road, right there on the road, he doesn't rent that from somebody, or I don't know if he has to have a permit. I don't know. So I'm just putting that out there.
Sure. No, and now I understand.
We can talk about Orlando. We can talk about tragedy, but right there in Kapaha Town, let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for bringing it to our attention for folks who aren't on that side of the island. I know where you're talking about. It's by the entryway to the Aragon business, right?
What kinds of guns does he make? Maybe we as a community should know, have the right to know, and maybe we should question whether he's parked there legally and can he be doing the business he's doing parked right there on that turnoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, I think this is part of the conversation for us to have is, if it's legal, is it fine, or is there an ethical question that comes into play? Do we want to have licensed gun shop owners advertising just the same way that they don't allow advertisement for alcohol or tobacco products in certain magazines or in certain periodicals? That maybe there's a way to address this issue, whether it's legislatively or just through the pressure that society can put on business owners.
Well, I think the first way to address it is to bring it to light and to ask people to think about it and to ask people, what do they feel every day when they drive through Kapaha Town and they see it? Because I know that I'm not the only one that has ever probably felt something when I've driven past it. Because for many years, I've never ever seen anything like that on Kauai. And the first time I saw it, it upset me.
Mm. Well, thank you for bringing it to light and sharing your mana'o here on Kauai Community Radio. Sister, your concerns are probably shared by many in our community.
So maybe we should find out about it. I guess we'll have to call the county or something. I'm not really quite sure how to do it, but maybe that's what we have to do.
In the phone book, there are a couple of different numbers, and feel free to call back and let us know what you found out.
Okay.
Appreciate that. Anything else you'd like to share? All righty, I guess she hung up, and we are just about out of time. I've got one last thing I want to play because I got to do it.
Attention recyclers, beginning June 1st, Kauai residents and businesses can recycle their electronic waste free of charge 6 days a week. E-waste will be accepted at the Puhi Metals Recycling Center Monday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Puhi Metals is located at 3951 Puhi Road, about a mile from the intersection of Kaumualii Highway. Acceptable e-waste includes computers and accessories, televisions, printers, office equipment, audio and video equipment, and handheld devices. All brands of e-waste will be accepted free of charge with no quantity limits. Services are provided by Resource Recovery Solutions, and e-waste is shipped for recycling to IMS Electronics Recycling in Washington, For more information, call the County Recycling Office at 241-4841, 241-4841, or visit our website at kauai.gov/e-waste, kauai.gov/e-waste. Help keep our garden aisle green. Recycle your e-waste.
Right on. Thanks for that public service announcement. And it is 6 o'clock. Dove is coming on board here. As soon as I get out of the way, I will do that right now as we speak. We've got a little bit of this music to take you home. Thanks for joining us here on Kauai Community Radio the last 2 hours. We'll be back next week, Thursday, with prosecuting attorney candidate Lisa Aaron. She'll be joining us here in the booth. Talk story about her candidacy for the position of county prosecuting attorney. All you people out there, remember, hug your loved ones. Love them up. Lick them up. Give them a like on Facebook. Tell them you love them.